Well, I guess we're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Let's leave. Hello, this is Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
Hey, I'm Ian Boothby. Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. Good to see you. Welcome to my home and to our little studio here.
As if we haven't spoken before this moment.
Yeah.
I just walked in silently, ignored you.
Yeah.
Put down my briefcase.
Well, that's real life. That's real life. This is showbiz, which is more important.
That's true.
This is, you know, this is the only thing that counts that'll be remembered.
That's true. Yes. Yeah. This will be remembered. Yeah, you're right. What am I thinking?
Yeah, I don't know. You weren't thinking. That was the damn problem.
All that pointless small talk.
To quote parents from my era, what was I thinking? You weren't thinking. Good point.
I think that's parents from this era, too. I don't think we should be painting parents from this era with a gilded brush.
Okay.
I think parents are pretty closely related to generationally.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Fair enough. We got to put stuff on the walls here. We got one wall that's got a bunch of our trophies and whatnot. We got Sneaky Dragons. We got things from Tintin. We got things from Dark Shadows. We got things, Sneaky Dragon statues people have made us. But the walls are blank.
They are.
Like we're an asylum that was scared to put anything up because it would mess up the patients. We got to put up some good posters and stuff of... You know, you've done some lovely title cards. We got some title cards up here.
Do that. We did have some up in the old place.
But, yeah, we did.
What happened?
But you know,
in the moving,
and then the pandemics and stuff, and every week it's a thing. And it, you know, we got to we got to spruce up the joint.
Yeah,
that way we can invite guests over again.
I didn't say anything about them, but I did see them at the pawn shop. So I don't want to bring it up in the show.
Oh,
I saw those my printed photographs. They're just printed very small on photograph paper.
And they're at the pawn shop. How much money they got for them.
That's right. What do they do? No, I'm just joking.
Right. Well, you did print them on $50 bills.
That was smart of me.
Yeah.
That made them highly desirable. Yep. For that time, I couldn't give them away.
Good value.
That's right. One of my most... Okay, one time I parked my truck in Vancouver and it was broken into.
No.
Boom. Now, when I say broken into, what I mean is I left it unlocked and someone opened the door.
Right.
And they stole things out of it. A bunch of CDs that I had in there that I had brought to work because I worked 8-hour shift and I would bring 8 hours worth of music on CD. And so they stole a bunch of CDs. And so my friend and I, we decided we would walk the length and breadth of Hastings Street and visit every pawn shop to see if we could see the CDs there. It seemed like the most likely thing that would happen. They would just
now,
take
how
them.
Much? Okay, how long after the incident did you do this?
It was within a week.
Okay, all right. Within a week, there was time for them to put them on the shelves.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe we should have waited longer. But anyway, we did that. We went for a long walk, and in those days, this is before East Hastings. I mean, that was where all the pawn shops were.
Yep.
In Vancouver. But this is before it was a complete shit show. Because really, there are no shops along there anymore. There's not much of anything along there. There's a few places.
Sadness.
It's all sadness, yes. There's drugstores that, you know, like all the methadone clinics and stuff like that. But everything else is just like vacated. But even then, it was kind of like a journey into sadness. In some ways, outrage. Because, like, there's one place. It wasn't on the main drag of Hastings. It was off a bit, but it was a pawn shop. And they literally had CD wallets full of CDs for sale.
Mm.
Like, no one on earth has ever gone, I'm going to sell my CDs in the CD wallet. I'll just take them to the store and sell them. Like, it's clearly like they're just buying stuff from people who have, but mine weren't there. And the end of the story is I did not find any of my CDs on this journey of, you know, 10 blocks or 20 blocks or how much we walked. But, you know, you go past like some were like legitimate pawn stores, you know, like pawn shops. There was that one that had a lot of musical instruments in it.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to get a guitar from there, but I never had the money. But I used to go and look at all the. I've always liked like hollow body electric guitars, you know, like kind of the big fat electric guitars, and they have like, but they have a, you know, like little F shaped frets or little holes, the F holes in them. I guess they're called F holes, I think.
Oh, okay. That's kind of funny.
And I always wanted one of those.
You know what? I'm thinking of all the letters that that they could be musically, and they all are dirty.
Yeah.
A-holes.
Yeah,
A-holes. B-holes. F-holes.
But F-holes are C-holes. They're kind of shaped like an F.
E is the only one.
They kind of have that F shape.
E is the only one that is not, couldn't be something that's like a body part.
Mm.
Yeah. That guy's a real E-hole. Ear hole is what that would be.
Which is kind of, sort of a mild.
That's very mild.
It's a mild one. Yeah, yeah.
G-holes. Wait, G-holes. Can't think of anything for G-holes.
Sure. But the sad thing
would be groin.
But it's
holes.
Still sad to see musical instruments in a pawn shop.
Oh, of course it is.
Because you know that was someone's dream to be a musician, and then you know, obviously
I had to
hit
sell a guitar.
Times.
Like it wasn't
someone else's, of course. But
no, it was my own. It was an acoustic that was like a gift to me when for my parents. And
okay,
yeah, it did mean a lot to me.
Yeah,
and then I was broke and I needed to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah,
and so sold it over at the Captain's.
Okay, yeah.
That's where I used to sell my stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You had an in there. He probably gave you a little extra.
Later.
Oh, later. This was, you're a customer who then became a...
A little bit later. It was unrelated. Yeah. And then it was kind of embarrassing to have to go in and sell stuff. So there was like, I think there was like at least three locations. So you go to the location that no one knew you at when it came to the selling time.
I do remember driving you there once to the one over by Elma.
Yeah.
And by over by UBC.
That was the main one.
That was the main one? Okay.
That was the main one. That was where,
you'd find the captain.
That's where you'd normally find the captain. There was one that was close to the old Hellkitty Studios, actually. It was about a block from there. Mm. They had one there. And I forget where the third one was. But
And the other sad thing you see is construction tools in pawn shops.
Mm.
Because it's a very seasonal job. So when you're up, you got your tools. And then when you're down, you pawn them to get by. And then I guess when things pick up again, I don't know if you rebuy stuff or you just go and see if you can buy them from the pawn shop.
Yeah, and I'd always sell like computer games when I was done with them because, I'm done.
Yeah.
And
these
are just going to lose value over time. So take them in and make a couple of bucks if you can.
That's true. You're right. You should get rid of it as soon as you can because they're just not only will they be outmoded, the whole system will be outmoded soon. Mm-hmm. So no one will.
Yeah, I mean, something like I wouldn't sell like a PlayStation game because, I think I had the realization that like these might be worth something at some point in the future, but computer games, no, it's just like the system's going to go out of style and forget it. Good night.
So when you say computer games, you mean like Atari ones or Commodore?
Nope. Well, yeah, I guess you go like Commodore, but like a PC game.
Oh, a PC game. Okay. I see. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Something on a floppy disk or some such, or
there was that fun game you had where it was a series of kind of mind puzzles. Is that the word I'm looking for? Anyway, just where you had
mind
to, like,
fuckers.
There you go. Where you had to like
real
use little things like a escalator and a spoon or something like that, and then you create these kind of Rube Goldberg like devices.
Yeah, that was the Incredible Machine.
There you go.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah, it was fun.
And you had to complete a task, and you could do them in a lot of different ways. It was pretty good. I remember that was the game I played on that, and Lemmings was another one too, where you had to build things to get like the lemmings from one side to the other, and not kill them. That was all fine and fine. We're better off now. Video games are infinitely better now.
Yeah, yeah.
We usually like end our time together after this with you putting on a VR helmet.
That's
and
true.
Going into a VR world where in the VR world you put on another VR helmet.
Yeah,
and then enter a VR world in the VR world.
It's kind of strange.
Yeah.
I guess their thinking was no one's going to believe this is real unless they put on a VR helmet in the VR. I guess it's kind of odd. Like, as if I'm having trouble understanding the reality of the game. Like, I'm going to be like, this is impossible. I can't play this game. It's stupid. And then, putting a VR helmet on. Oh, now it makes sense. It's very odd.
Well, it's interesting because like when you complete a level, you're kind of pushed out into the real world, which isn't the real world.
Yeah.
And then you got to like pick up a little floppy disk, one of those things, 3.5-inch disk or whatever it is.
Yep.
And then put that in and start it up again and then start your murder spree. But that's a game called Super Hot that we've been playing.
Yes. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's once again, is sort of a puzzle game because you're put into various situations. You're dropped into a situation.
Yeah.
And then you have to react to that situation. And then what's great but also frustrating is that you have to complete all the tasks within that level. Otherwise, you have to start all over again, which can become frustrating. And then you get lazy and you're like, well, let's get through this quickly because I know, oh, I died. Oh, I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
I thought I did.
The gimmick is Your enemies can't move until you start to move.
Mm-hmm. Unless so you shoot, and then they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, so you got to be very precise with mm-hmm. what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can see a bullet coming at you, and you can dodge it, but that's the only thing that's going to make the bullet get closer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when they open up with many, many machine guns, it gets really, really tricky.
Yeah, well, the shotguns are the really... I found the most difficult to deal with. But
yeah,
you've gone ahead of me now.
No, I really didn't. I didn't get to a save point.
Oh, okay.
I have gotten through. Yeah, we were looking at like three guys are shooting at you.
Yeah,
and like, what do you do?
You have no weapon.
You got no weapon. So normally your deal would be you'd have to disarm one of them and then use their weapon to shoot the other all three. But it's too far away. How do you do it? Mm-hmm. And the answer was duck. Just duck. And if you duck out of the way of the bullets, you're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it puts you to a new level. I'm like, then you're behind them up on a ledge and you're throwing stuff at them. And they're, huh? What? Hey, how do you do that?
Yeah.
After I play that game, I've got to play like a game where you shoot a lot of people in real time. Just to go, ugh, because it's so frustrating, all the slowness.
Yeah.
So I'll play like Pistol Whip or something after that be like, yeah, it's kind of an on a rail shooter thing, but it's still fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the people don't look realistic, so you don't feel like a monster.
It'll just get more real.
Could. Or it could get just more basic and efficient.
Yeah. I just mean like the VR games are just going to get more and more detailed and more real.
They could. And some do. I don't necessarily, I mean, I still look at like how popular something like a Tetris is, you know, and there's nothing realistic about that, but it just connects with you, you know, and something like Candy Crush now isn't really realistic. It's just like,
I don't know. I've never played any of those games.
That's one of those match three games. Will you ever play Bejeweled?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I mean, I played Tetris when it was a computer game. I had it on my computer.
Still is on computers. Yeah.
I just mean like a PC or a Mac actually, but. But yeah, I've never played it on a phone or anything.
Detail is fine. Realism is fine.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of realistic games that I'm like, meh, it's fine. But, you know, sometimes the simpler...
Followed or...
Sometimes the more cartoonish or simpler games are much more satisfying.
So they just released an adaptation of Fallout, right?
Yeah, TV series, yes.
Okay. And
Fallout's had at least, I know, at least three games.
What was the one?
More than that.
Was it
many more? I'm really underscoring that.
Was it Half-Life? There was one where like
Half-Life was a good game,
but it was kind of based in this sort of world. It was sort of like a retro 50s.
Oh, BioShock.
BioShock. Oh, that's,
yeah, that was that even was... farther back than the 50s. Yeah,
but it had like kind of an Ayn Rand sort of feel to it. Yeah.
Very Ayn Rand.
Yeah. That was a fun game. Mm-hmm. That was a fun world they created for that game.
Very violent. Okay, well, and it had that fun. It had that good thing where like some of the characters were so powerful that when you woke them up or messed them up or saw one in the room, you're like, oh, jeez. Oh, cripes. What do I do? I got to like get rid of everything else first because I can't be messing with this thing. And then it was very satisfying when you beat the thing or you end up possessing it. Or some such. Huh. Yeah. Huh. And there was a lot of ethical issues with BioShock as well, where you're like, I don't think I'm the good guy.
Interesting.
You know, I got to protect this little girl. Wait, the little girl's evil. Oh, I don't know what do I do?
I think I only played a little bit of that game with you. There's one I played more of, but my ineptitude is what really drives your interest in my playing. So.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's fine to be a little inept.
I don't play them that much. I did watch a little bit of Last of Us.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen it.
Nope.
You've played the game, though.
Yep.
I find the...
My sister-in-law, Vicky, host of Refresh My Memory, she's played through all the games and all the bonus material and whatnot. Okay. She's very, very good at it.
I find the concept of the game, or the show, whatever... It's kind of horrifying. This idea of like this idea that this fungus, you know, takes people over, which I don't know, kind of like, I mean, it does happen in nature where there's like ants and stuff like that are driven bonkers by fungus that climb up a
very disturbing
grass blade, and then they get eaten by sheep, and then the sheep get the fungus, and then they poop it out, and then the ants eat it again, and it goes on and on. But you know, in the world of the show, there is an invasive fungus that humans are susceptible to, which changes us in kind of a goofy way. Like when I was watching the show, I was like, they reminded me of the Dalek, the human Dalek combination from Daleks in New York,
yeah,
which was hilarious to me. So watching this, I'm sort of laughing at what they look like rather than being scared. they're scary because there's a lot of them or whatever. Yeah. But
and they click, which is creepy. click.
But the way they look is sort of amusing. So it kind of works and doesn't work at the same time. Maybe that's good. Maybe you're not totally horrified by it.
They are scary in the game. Because, again, you can hear them.
Mm.
You're like, oh, there's trouble.
Yeah.
And, you know, after they really creep you out about them, there's one scene in the game where, you know, you get caught in a little trap that, like, hangs you upside down. So you've got to fight all these things while upside down.
Yeah.
So your perspective is completely skewed. And it's like, jeez. Like, so screwed. And when you beat it, you feel really good that you beat it.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. These, I guess with like, game-based TV shows... Maybe games work better as TV shows than they do as movies because of the length of time, which gives it more of like a playing a game feel to it, I suppose. But
well, the thing about most video games is the thrill comes from you die, you come back.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have the satisfaction at the end of I beat this thing and you feel really satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas because if you're going with reality, well, you from the beginning to the end, nothing's ever hurt you, really.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's or enough to mortally kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, well, this wasn't that hard. It wasn't that difficult.
Yeah.
What's the challenge? As a movie that isn't a video game movie, that is a video game movie, is it Day After Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise one? The one where
Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow. Because, yeah, he keeps dying over and over again and has to learn and learn and learn. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, ends up beating the thing. And it's like, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You have to do kind of a Groundhog Day situation in order to replicate the feel of a video game.
Mm-hmm. And they just memorize the pattern. Like, they just go, you know, in the movie, they're memorizing the pattern of events.
Which is how some video games work,
you know?
Yeah.
So there's scenes where they're going like, go left, go right, check, do, you know, and so and then they fail because they miss that one step and then they have to start all over again and continue on. Or they get to a point where they haven't done it. Now it's new, so we have to go through it. And
something they did with Resident Evil that I liked back in the day was you go through the whole thing and it would be a really hard game and a lot of like big monsters that you're like, geez, and you finally beat them all. Then you get to the end and you get like a rocket launcher or something that's an amazing weapon. And then you beat the main thing and then it goes, would you like to play again? And I'm like, nah, I think I'm all right with the weapons you have. Yes, I would. So you go back to these, everyone that gave you guff.
Yeah.
You've got like a thing that like is a one-shot killing machine. And just like, listen, blam! It just feels great. You just bowl through it all.
Sure.
So good.
Nothing like God mode.
Yeah. I remember like Resident Evil 4, one of the scariest moments I've ever had in a video game was just this guy with a chainsaw just comes up and just cuts your head off. You're like, what's that about? Wait a second, where's my gun? Jesus, what? And it's like, yeah, dead. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God, I've been killed a lot of times in a video game, but never in a way that made me go, jeez, I don't want to go back to that world. Well, you have to. Oh no, let's fight that guy.
Yeah, those kind of games I feel like would be even more fun with like surround sound if they were like an immersive sense of sound to the creepiness of it all.
Yeah. You know? Oh, I found out something interesting on the internet.
Oh.
Yeah, here was the thing.
You're probably the only person.
Well, there you go. Could be. It was like when you're watching like a Netflix show.
Yeah.
And you have that thing where like the voices are too soft. And the music is too loud.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You're like, what's going
this
on?
This is a good PSA, but I know this.
Yeah, you know this, right? Mm-hmm. And it means that your system thinks you've got surround sound.
Yeah, it's a default setting for TVs nowadays because most people have sound bars or have
surround sound. So you can systems. Go to the sound and you can adjust it to basically your regular sound and then everything evens out.
That's right.
I'm like, yeah, that's been a problem many times when I've watched stuff. So yeah, it was a good tip.
Yeah, and some people's TVs come with I can name for it now. Motion, I can't remember what it is now, but it kind of gives your TVs a look like it's videotape rather than actual, like everything kind of has a look of videotape to it. So if you turn that off, okay, it has a name, motion blending or something. I can't remember what it is.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I know there was that mode where everything was weird watching a movie and it looked realistic, like it was home movies. And I was like, what's this?
Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
jarring. Yeah. I kind of liked it, like as it made it more realistic. And everyone else around me went, this is terrible, turn it off.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, well, fine.
I don't think, it doesn't feel real though. I guess because we're used to watching movies with a touch of grain. In fact, when they started doing all these 4K restorations, they were doing them so that they had that look to them, like absolutely pristine quality. Mm-hmm. But people didn't like it, so they actually are reinserting like a graininess into the film after they do the after they do the 4K restoration.
Oh, okay.
Just to keep it so it looks like a movie to people, because everyone's just like, well, why am I watching a videotape of the Maltese Falcon or something? Like,
yeah,
it just feels weird.
I kind of like it. Yeah. I kind of like it, but I get it. I get the reasons.
That's why people objected to the first Hobbit, because it was filmed with that 126 FPS or whatever. That because of that smooth look and same with Gemini Man, the Ang Lee film with Will Smith. Mm. I saw it in a one whatever it is 126 FPS version in the theater, and it was just terribly. It's just hard to watch because you're not used to it.
I'm trying to remember what it was specifically. You probably know, but it was not Inglourious Basterds. It was A Hateful Eight.
Mm-hmm.
And it was showing at the park, and it was showing in the park on film.
70 millimeter.
Yeah, 70 millimeter. And I was like, oh, big lineup for that. We all went, we sat down, and was like, can you tell the difference? I can't. Like, okay, maybe my eyes are just not good enough for this. But it feels good to know that we're doing it. Yeah, good for us. We're good people. We're good film loving people. Good for us. How do you like it? It's a bit long. It is a bit long. The guy doesn't cut a word. Good for him.
Yeah. I didn't see the 70 millimeter. Someone was telling me they saw Oppenheimer in 70 millimeter IMAX, which seems crazy. That's a lot of detail for a movie about a lot of meetings and people sitting in rooms. Yeah,
that is the thing. I didn't see it in IMAX, but after I saw it, it was like, well, there's a couple of scenes where shit blows up, but then there's a lot of Robert Downey Jr. going, you don't have the vote, sir. I'm like, all right. Passing water glasses to each other.
Yeah. Wow. I can see why they kicked Mission Impossible out of theaters for this, so this could show in IMAX.
Oh my God, right?
It's kind of crazy. Yeah.
It is interesting that everyone just got on board that film. It's fine. It's a good film.
It's a very good film.
Yeah. But it's a weird film for like people to be at home and just going, hey, who wants to go see Oppenheimer? Yes. Let's go see the making of the atomic bomb. Yes, that's what I want to see. There's a lot of court scenes. Nice. Let's go. Like I'm in. Okay. Fair enough. It just didn't seem like the kind of thing in this day and age that people would like get in the car, buy their popcorn, and go sit down and watch, and you want to see Oppenheimer having sex in his chair? What? Like during what? Well, when he's being questioned for a meeting. What? What's going on? I'm not 100% sure. But you're interested in the movie again, right? I'm watching the movie. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting up to go to the bathroom right now. I want to know what the fuck's going on. Fair enough. And now back to the meetings. Back to the black and white meetings.
I mean, it obviously was kind of like a moment, sort of one of those sort of things that sweeps the nation. I just can't see, like, if studios are like, oh, well, this is what people want. They want a movie like Oppenheimer. We're going to give them Eisenhower. next year, Eisenhower in IMAX. You know what I mean? But it's not going to capture, it's not going to be the same. Like, people aren't going to, like, aren't going to react to
it. It also really helped that Barbie was coming out, too. And people were like, the same day? These films that are so radically different?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to see both. All right, that's a weird little challenge. Fair enough. Let's do that.
5 hours a movie? Yeah, and I mean, Mission Impossible, which I guess was always a summer movie before, because I seem to remember seeing the second one in the summertime. I don't remember now, but it just seemed like it opened at the wrong time, like a week before a movie that was guaranteed to kick it out of IMAX theaters.
Mm.
Like Oppenheimer was sold to theaters with a guarantee that it would get IMAX.
Yeah.
So Mission Impossible had no chance of staying in theaters, even if it was really popular. It was basically,
which it was.
It was popular, but it wasn't popular enough because it just kind of got booted to the side. It didn't have like what Top Gun Maverick had, which was like an empty schedule that it just kind of like coasted on for 3 to 4 months and raked in the big bucks.
It was also a weird situation where, it was supposed to have been released years before. And it was just like sitting on the shelf for the amount of time while COVID went through.
Mm, mm.
So, you know, there's a bit of like, this film's earned it. You gotta not, you gotta let it have its go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So making movies is hard is what we've heard. It's hard.
Well,
you make a movie and then they kick you out, or they make a movie and then they won't let you open up the theater.
Well, that's it. I mean, you make a movie, and I guess if you're a director or a, you know, the creative part of it, you're like, well, we're done. You know, dust off your hands, and then people are like, "Oh no, no! Now we got to figure out when it's gonna come out, and you know what?
How are we gonna market it?
Yeah, how are we gonna market it? Are we gonna make Ian mad by putting a bunch of misleading things into
the trailer? Bunch of scenes in the trailer that won't be in the movie.
Let's really get them.
Yep.
Let's make Monkey Man look like it's John Wick. It's not John Wick, but we'll make it look like it.
Have you seen
Monkey Man? I went and saw it last night, yeah.
Okay, we're going to see it soon.
Well, good.
It's weird that they had the same poster as the new Omen movie.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's the same poster.
It's interesting.
Like, it's both posters are like, you know.
Framed in a doorway.
It's a framed doorway, red. It's exactly the same red.
Oh, I saw a different poster for the Omen then.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
I was
at the theater yesterday.
It's the same poster.
There's a lot of movies coming out that look fun. I don't remember. It's called Amelia or something like that. It's not called Amelia.
Tell me about it.
It's a little kid vampire movie. I'm not giving anything away. That's the trailer.
Okay.
People are hired to kidnap this kid, and it turns out she's a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the hijinks that ensue! That looked fun. It's sort of a locked house. Look out! You're trapped in a house with a monster, and you're criminals. So I'm not sure how we're supposed to feel about you versus this kid that you've. So that's interesting. And then
so it's like Home Alone, but meets Dracula.
Yes. And then, so that looks fun. I think Fall Guy looks fun with that guy.
Ryan Reynolds.
Not Ryan Reynolds. No. Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling. And here's, Emily Blunt. By the way, the two posters. There's Monkey Man and there's Omen.
Oh, my gosh.
Quite similar.
Yeah, apparently they hired the same company and they just couldn't be bothered. Good enough.
All right.
They said... So yeah, that movie Fall Guy looks like it'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
We got a little taste of Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling working together at the Oscars.
Yes.
So we know that they blend.
They're good-looking people with good senses of humor.
There you go.
And that's what we like.
Mm-hmm.
We want a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, maybe that's what the other guys needed.
Who's the other guys? The other guys?
Yeah.
Need a woman?
I mean, I really like that movie, but maybe he needed like a female foil rather than a male foil with Russell Crowe's character. I don't like anything else about the movie, but I love, I think it's called Crazy Stupid Love with Steve Carell and you know who I mean.
And Emily Stone does scenes with him, yeah.
They're great together in that movie. They are so good. It's unbelievable. The rest of the movie I could care less about, throw it away, throw it in the garbage can. But their scenes together are just like a movie in itself. And when La La Land was coming out, I was like, oh, baby, this will be great. And then it wasn't. It's too bad. But yeah, they're so good in that movie. But anyway, that movie looks good. There's one with Bill Skarsgård, I think. Not the Crow. That is also coming out.
Right.
There's a new Crow.
Yeah, Bill Skarsgård's abs.
But there's
so much abs.
There's another one where
he plays so
a character.
So abs.
I can't remember the name of it. Sorry, but he plays a character. I saw the trailer for this when I went to see another different movie, not Monkey Man, but he's mute, and so his voice is H. John Benjamin.
Boy Kills World.
That looks fun as well.
Yeah.
And there's other ones if I could think of them. I would. I'm gonna go see Civil War this weekend as well.
Yeah, we might see that too.
Because I'm a fan of Alex Garland.
Mm-hmm.
So
it looks like an interesting concept. Looks like it might be a bummer, but it might also be good.
I don't know. I haven't seen anything about it.
Monkey Man, would you recommend?
I would recommend it. I would recommend it with the proviso or the warning or the caution or the just that don't. It's not John Wick. It's its own thing. It's not a John Wick movie or in any way. So
it's not about the band The Monkees.
It's not about the band The Monkees, and it has no operators, no 40 style operators who are heavily tattooed.
Okay,
working the switchboards. Yeah,
is there good action?
The fight scenes are very visceral. There's a little bit. I found the shaky cam a little off putting sometimes.
Okay,
but
the only time I've really found that was in one of the Bourne movies, the Jason Bourne movies. I think the second one. I think that was just like, I'm done. This is too much. All right.
I didn't mind it in the second one. It was right, a third one that, it. Yeah, it was a third one.
By the time
I
got to the third one, it was just like, oh, Jesus.
Because I really like the fight scene in the, in like the little, in the townhouse in Germany. He has that fight.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And I really like that sequence. I thought that was a really well-filmed fight scene.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit shaky cam, but I put up with it in that movie.
It was close to making me nauseous. The only film that's actually literally made me nauseous was Cloverfield. Was just too shaky, and I think we were sitting too close.
Mm.
And it was just by the, it was like, Jesus, all right, enough. Crying out loud.
I remember when I went to see it, there were actually like warnings on the door of the theater as I went in.
Yeah.
Just saying, hey.
Hey, buddy.
If you have motion sickness problems, don't go see Cloverfield. Take it from us.
Yeah.
Who have to clean up the theater. Don't see Cloverfield.
Yeah, I think there was other people definitely that were having the same situation that I was there. Like, huh. That's
I was fine.
But then there was a lot of gross out stuff in it too.
That that's the part I liked about it.
I don't care for a gross out. Do not like it.
Yeah, that's the but it was tasteful gross out.
Okay.
You know, like when Izzy Kaplan's character explodes, it happens behind a screen. So you just see suggestions of it, but you don't see like the whole horribleness of it, which I like that. I like when they just kind of hint at it rather than throw it in your face.
And as you know, I like an Evil Dead 2. I like The Thing. Yeah. I like those kind of things. There's a lot of, you know, stuff I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know how to describe
it. Well, it's tone is what the difference is.
Yeah, it's a tone. It's a tone thing.
Yeah.
When it's just like gross for mean's sake for bleh, I'm just, bleh. Yeah, no, thank you. Me. I have a tender tummy.
I mean, if you don't like it, that's fine.
Dead Alive, Brain Dead? It's both.
Yeah, things. Dead Alive, yeah.
Is it also called Brain Dead?
I think it was called Brain Dead.
It's both yeah, things.
I know it's Dead Alive, Dead / Alive.
Yeah, yeah, that's like a real gross out movie as well.
But once again, it's tonally.
It's very much Evil Dead 2 in the same. Yeah,
it's just a lot of red liquid flying around. Yes. Whereas something like Cloverfield, you know, you see her character is obviously sick. You know something's up because she's been bitten. You don't know quite what it is, but then you see her like taken away and then explode on a stretcher. Off camera, you know, you don't have any affection for the characters who are being destroyed by a lawnmower and Dead Alive. They're just extras who are running around in a room. That's a character that you've come to like, and now she dies, and that's all you're.
I'm doing a YA graphic novel, horror graphic novel, right now for Scholastic, and it was nice. Something that they did was they gave it to our editor without telling the editor the genre.
Okay.
And so she's reading it, and I'm getting the notes, and she wrote her notes kind of in real time as she went along.
Okay.
And there was a, oh, no. Oh, I'm worried about this person. What's going on here? Oh, my gosh. And so there's a lot of those notes, which are pretty good. She's like, oh, ah, a lot of just screaming, like, I don't want to turn the page. Oh, no. And like, oh, I hope this person makes it. They're probably going to be the hero. They're not going to be the hero. Yeah. But they really ended up liking it. And it was a thrill. And it was like, oh, wow, that was interesting to get an editor that like had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, that's how they do it with their editors, with their stories. It's like, I'm just going to give it to them cold and you don't know what genre. It could be a romantic comedy. It could be a horror.
Yeah.
It could be just slapstick fun. It could be a superhero story. They don't tell them. And like you're learning as you go.
I guess when I watch a movie, I'm watching a movie and I know I'm watching a movie. So my reaction to stuff isn't like, oh, this is terrible. What's happening to this person? I'm like, oh, this is interesting. How they're doing this, you know, oh, this is a good effect. Or I like what, you know, this is a good, good way to, you know, off this person. This really kind of imaginative what they're doing here.
Yeah. We watch movies, at least the way you describe it. Very differently.
Yeah.
In that I watch them kind of like life. And maybe you live your life like this as well. But it's like, oh, well, I'm going out today. Well, these things could happen. These five different things could happen. I don't know which one. Oh, I'm worried about that. And I'm like that in a movie, you know, where it's like, oh, well, no, this could happen. This could happen. This could happen. And instead, you're just watching the movie. Well, I guess I'll see what'll happen. And then you watch it, and then you react to it.
Yeah.
But you don't, like, project ahead of it.
No,
and
I don't.
You don't try to figure out who the murderer is.
No.
And you just, and I'm like, oh, I wonder who the murderer is. Well, there's that clue, that clue, that clue, that clue. So I've got my own narration going on in the movie while I'm watching
at
the same time.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's interesting. And I kind of am like that with life. Like, I don't walk out of my house going, you know, getting my car going, oh, I could crash in my car today. Oh, this better be careful. You know, I just don't think about that at all. Mostly because why would...
You don't think like if traffic's bad on this, I'll go to this. If it's bad on that, I'll go to this.
No, mm-hmm. I've already planned that out. Mm. I've already planned my route. So, yeah, I don't really... I don't worry about it. When that happens, you know, if I'm going over the overpass and I look and I can see like traffic is backed up a mile in both directions, and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to go on the freeway. I'll just keep driving straight and I'll go, you know, go a different route. But I don't think about it until it happens. You know, I have music playing. I'm going la la la. I've never think about things. You know, you're just driving along, thinking of this or that, and then you look and go, oh my god, better not go this way.
I usually think with whatever I'm doing, like say I was going to a certain pool tonight, I'd be like, okay, well, if I'm gonna swim the lanes. If the lanes are too busy, I guess I could go by the lazy river kind of space and I could do just some exercises in that. Well, if that doesn't work out and that's too busy, I guess I can go to the hot tub area and I can meditate. And then I can like just walk around the track afterwards when I'm kind of loosened up. Okay, but if that doesn't work, and I'll think about those five different things I can do.
Okay.
Like I'm going to be going to a different pool tonight where it's just like, I don't know, it's chaos.
Yeah.
So I am going to just put on the improv mindset and just adjust as I go along.
Yeah.
You know, it's one where all of the older guys, every older guy that's there has tattoos. Everyone.
Huh.
Like this guy's 70s, 80s. Yeah, yeah. Got, like they've had some living.
Sure.
And all
it's a working class pool.
Almost all the older women are in bikinis. And it's like, huh. It's like, there's something going on. There's something going on. There's like, especially in the hot tub area, there's something going on.
Okay.
And it's like, you know what it is? Yeah. None of my business. Yeah, it's none of my damn business. And I'm just going to...
Do not disturb.
There's a pool that's near me.
Yeah.
And that pool, I will engage with people and talk and have a conversation.
Sure.
And that's fine. And I don't want to say we have weirdos, but we have like strong character types in there who sit there with, you know, their sons and their grandsons and they drink a Pepsi in the hot tub and they've all got matching tattoos and I'm like, there's something there. And I could actually probably ask it, but you do not ask at the Burnaby pool.
If this change room's a rockin', don't come a knockin'.
Well, if this the change room will normally have like a diaper in it still or something.
That's terrible.
It's terrible. Yes, you're correct. No. That would not happen at our other ones.
And yeah.
There's something that
that's
a
classless pool.
It's like, come on.
Yeah, boo.
And it's always weird too when you're changing and some guy comes in with the hose and just starts spraying the floor.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, time to clean the floor. And it's like, well, how do you put on shoes? I got to get on a bench and just pull my feet up and I can't put my socks down. What the hell is this? Do it later.
Yeah.
Do it later, especially if it's like 5 minutes before the pool is closing. Sorry, you got a notice of some
sort. Yeah, I got a notice of some sort, but it's nothing. Don't worry.
All right.
I'm just going to put my... do not disturb on, which I should have done earlier, but I forgot.
Fair enough.
I forgot.
Yeah, it's a rough and tumble pool.
Yeah, it does sound like a rough and tumble pool. But once again, I don't, like if Lisa and I go to the hot tub, which we haven't been doing lately because she has a bathtub now, which she's been using twice a day.
Right. and she's able to find it because her eyes are good.
Her eyes are better, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still sore. She's still...
Oh, I'm sorry about
they're
that.
They're still healing, but it's been kind of up and down that way, but she's much, much better.
Good.
She's
got the 20/20 vision though now, right? Mm. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Her eyes are still like her eye is still red though. Yes. So there's still blood in her eye. So still healing.
Right.
Still healing.
So when you toast her, you go, "There's blood in your eye." She's like, "This wasn't funny the first 10 times."
First 10 times.
Also, you don't drink. You don't drink. So put down that whiskey.
I'm like, and I said to her, "How do you know I don't drink?"
Aside from knowing me for 30 years. All that evidence to the contrary.
Yes.
I say to you.
No, it's funny that you, I wouldn't say I'm careless, but I don't worry. I'm not a worrier. I just blithely go into situations.
No, that's good. I spend a lot of time trying not to worry. Mm-hmm. So I'm envious of your non-worriedom.
Now, saying that, obviously I do have things that get in my way. I'm very creatively blocked, you know, like to steal a concept for another podcast. But I'm, you know, I have those sort of things, whether it's for drawing or like
tiling a floor. Is that because of worry?
Yeah, I'm a perfectionist, so that makes it difficult to get started on things to get, you know, to get past those sort of, and then to not fall into like a pit of despair when things don't go perfectly the way right. you want them to.
Has being a perfectionist worked out for you all right?
No, not at all. It's terrible.
Okay. Do you know any perfectionists that it worked out for good?
I don't know. I don't really know.
Yeah, let's see. You know, that sounds like one of those questions of the week.
That's right. How has your perfectionism helped you?
Yeah, it's like, are the people that you admire, are they perfectionists? And, you know, what does that, yeah. what does that mean? I mean, to me, I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks, like Martin Short and Eric mm-hmm. Idle and yeah. Steve Martin. And maybe Steve Martin is a perfectionist. That's a possibility.
I think, yeah, he's probably the closest. But I think he's
loosening up now.
But I also think he's kind of in like the Jim Henson point, which is where, you know, you're very demanding, but you're willing to work on the fly. You know what I mean? Like, so you know, like Jim Henson was obviously like very focused and very like wanted things to be just so. But at the same time, he also was okay with working in a kind of a flow, you know, like letting things happen as yeah. they would. As long as it was moving forward, he was happy.
And he was open to doing improv with Frank Oz on things. You got a lot of clips of them jamming and
yeah, or even the jamming with kids on Sesame Street, where sure. you'd have kids say unexpected things and, you know, and have to react with a puppet on your hand
mm-hmm.
as a puppet or Muppet. But yeah, like, I just think, yeah, I don't really know. I mean, there are obviously perfectionists who get something done, but I don't think they get very much done in their life. At some point, they're able to like squeeze it out, and then they get bound. It gets all kind of blocked up again.
Well, it also feels like
that sounded terrible.
I mean, again, going for the Steve Martin thing, like he's both a magician and he's a banjo player, mm-hmm. and in both those things, you know, you see magic tricks that he did in the late '60s, and you okay. see banjo playing he did in the early '70s.
Yeah,
and then you hear his banjo now. And you see magic tricks that he does now
yep.
and go, not much difference to me as on the surface level. Like to him, I'm sure he sees the years and years
of practice. And maybe that's where his perfectionism is, in his banjo playing.
Could be.
He does take very seriously.
Oh, he does.
You know, and maybe in his magic as well, which sure. is why he went into comedy. Because that was something that he didn't have to take as seriously
right.
as banjo playing or
magic. And he loves painting, but he doesn't paint.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that helps that, you know, he has such a love for the masters, but he doesn't participate in that. So mm-hmm. he can just enjoy it
yeah.
from a distance.
Yeah.
But yeah, on a surface level, to me, to the observer, when I see him doing a magic trick like on a Smothers Brothers show, I'm like, that's fine. That's fine. That's yeah, yeah. that's totally acceptable. Or you see him playing banjo on the Muppet Show in the 70s. I'm like, wow, he's really going. It's good. And then you hear him now and go like, I can't tell the difference. But yeah. I'm sure it's at least decades better.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But to the yeah. naked ear,
yeah.
only the expert would go, he's way better now. I'm like, fine. I hope you're happy with that.
That's right. His claw hammer is so much better than it was. Or whatever banjo technique.
I got a friend, my friend Joanne, who I do Critical Hit with, and she plays banjo. Mm. I've never seen anyone play banjo at the level of, it's like immediately it's like, do you play banjo? I play a little banjo. Oh, can I hear? Well, how did you jump to that? How'd you get there? I yeah, mean, yeah. I play enough guitar mm. that I know it's like, I couldn't like pick up the guitar and go, oh, do you like this? But like all the banjo players I know immediately can do like Smoky Mountain Breakdown. Like, yeah, how yeah. the frick do you do that?
Maybe it's easier to play the banjo than we think.
I throw my hands up in the air. I go like, I'm barely like doing a ukulele. Like amazing. But yeah, all of them. Mm. Like they immediately grasp it. But yeah, I'd say Steve Martin is probably the closest thing there and the perfectionist thing. And even him, did you watch the documentary at all that
It's on Apple Plus, so I know I have not.
Okay. But he talks about how like he's in his 70s now and he's more relaxed than he's ever been. Just really enjoying life.
Cool. Oh, this is a brief aside. I won't go into too much detail, but just for any listeners who are interested, there is a Judy Sill documentary that is coming out.
Who is Judy Sill?
She was a folk singer, a kind of singer-songwriter in the Joni Mitchell mode in the early 70s, who unfortunately didn't quite connect with audiences of the day, but she was just brilliant. Had a very tragic life, but There's a documentary coming out about her. It's coming out on the 12th of April, which is actually today. But it's available on demand on Apple Plus and on Amazon Prime. So if you're interested, if you're a Judy Sill fan, I know some of you are out there, this Word to the Wise, there's a documentary, interestingly produced by Maya Hawke.
Who is Maya Hawke? That sounds
familiar. Ethan Hawke's daughter.
Very good.
You'll know her from Stranger Things, where she plays Steve's friend, something or other. I don't know her name. Robin. Robin. They work at the ice cream shop together.
When I was
My favorite part of Stranger Things is Steve and Robin working in, working in the ice cream shop at the mall.
When I was in London, we were doing our Canucksploitation show. There was a pub that was nearby, and we would sometimes go into the pub, and we would be told, Ethan Hawke wants to be left alone. I'm like, what? And we saw over, and Ethan Hawke was like sitting and drinking by himself.
Yeah.
And we would usually say, same. Please let people know.
I guess I think that just a difference in like cultural personality. Like maybe in England, people are more likely to accost him.
Maybe. You know. I just can't see a British celebrity, you know, going, if Stephen Fry was in there, I was like, Stephen Fry would like to be left alone. Yeah. No, he wouldn't say that because he knows like everyone would like
climb. He knows he wouldn't be.
Yeah, it would like, whoa, you say badass, I say it. But, you know, it's the American thing of like, you know, need this space and like, well, you look like you're drinking and sad over there. But yeah, he was doing some play in town.
He was in, you know, he needed his me time.
Yeah. It was like Hamlet or some such. And it was just like,
yeah, easy. A mere 3 hours to memorize.
Yeah, it's a proven winner. What's the risk?
That's right.
You get to the end of Hamlet and people go, boo! That's right. We didn't like that ending.
That's how I thought it would end.
Yeah, boo! Bring back Yorick!
I was trying to solve who the murderer was and turned out not be the person I thought it was.
He spelled it all out for me. Boo! Oh, you kill everybody? Boo! Boo, it's boring. Boo.
Yeah.
I saw him breathing at the end. They're all breathing. They're fine.
Yes. I thought I saw an interview with him with his daughter, and they were charming.
Oh, I'm glad to hear
so
that.
So that made me happy. I like when people get along with their daughters, I guess. Mm-hmm. Call me crazy.
Oh, well, then you would like the Steve Martin documentary.
He has a daughter?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And it's a very sweet way that they... show her without showing her. It's very sweet. And you're like, yeah, you're just like, oh, you just love all of them so much by the end of it. Yeah, it's so great. It's in two parts. The first part, fine, slick, put together well, really interesting, money in the bank, really good documentary. The second one just is like him now. And you're like, oh, you're just watching microwave eggs. Yeah. There was someone who said, like, you know, you love Steve Martin except for two things. One, he microwaves eggs and keeps his bread in the fridge, which are unforgivable sins. But aside from that, he's a good guy.
That'll dry your bread out.
Yeah. What are you doing, Steve? I guess he makes toast.
If you're just doing toast, I guess it's all right. But yeah. Still.
And also, you're microwaving your eggs?
Wow, it's weird.
Come on, man.
What about on the show? What's the point? All those great omelets.
What show is that?
Murders in the Building.
Oh, yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, what a hypocrite.
What a hypocrite. Make a goddamn omelet.
His character is different than him in reality. Boo.
Boo indeed. Yeah, I think he's probably
on. But he's not an idiot?
I'm sure he's on one of those LA diets where it's like, you know, you can have this much of this and this much of that and this much of this and this much of that. So might as well microwave it. Who gives a shit? You know, you're just eating it and now you're getting on with your life.
That's true. I guess that's it. It's just a function. It's not a pleasure.
It's not a pleasure. Yeah, it's not whatever. Which is weird because you think like when I'm a millionaire, I'm going to eat so well and have the most delicious. No, you're going to eat like dust, a plate of fucking dust.
Well, if you're a millionaire celebrity, I guess. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And then a lot of it is like seeing him going out and biking. That's cool. It's cool to see someone who's like 75.
Yeah.
Who's out biking. And then Martin Short joins him. And I think Martin Short might even be like older than him. I'm like, yeah, they're biking. Why not?
Yeah.
Like, that's nice to know. You're still a person. You're still doing stuff. Yeah. That's great.
Apparently, they don't worry about falling down.
Because
if they did.
Yeah. So you fall and you deal with it.
Well.
I watched Joe Biden fall off a bike and then he got back up. It was fine.
Oh, he's fine?
Yeah. He's like 78 and fell off his bike. It was a famous scene falling off his bike.
I haven't seen that. I've seen him tripping up the stairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know what happened after that? He was walking. He was fine. If I did that tripping up the stairs, I'd be nursing so many bruises. Holy moly.
He's all right. I'm all right, Jack.
Yeah. And then you go like, oh, luckily there's no footage of Trump being embarrassed going upstairs. You mean the one with the toilet paper on his shoe? Yeah. Or the one where he can't fold an umbrella when he gets to the top of the stairs?
Leaves it behind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, no, it's fine. Done. Okay. Good luck, buddies. You know, a little sad news this week about Trina Robbins.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, did you ever meet Trina?
I did not meet Trina Robbins. Okay. I know that you had met her.
Had a couple of dinners next to her and what have you. Yeah.
I would have enjoyed that. I would have been like, tell me your feelings about Robert Crumb.
Oh, boy. You would have done that once, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
She was definitely a conversation dominator when something got brought up.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, there was that. And Steve Leoola, who's her partner, he was a very friendly guy who got along very well with him. I found out some interesting trivia about her that she used to run a clothing store and she would make clothes for Donovan and Mama Katz.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there's a couple others back in
the old hippie days. So this was in San Francisco?
I guess so, yeah. I can't think of any other way. Because
Donovan did visit San Francisco in his hippie days. He was there.
And speaking of
he wrote about it.
And speaking of costume designing, she also designed the costume for Vampirella, which, let's be honest, was at least half the character
for Vampirella.
Yeah, what do you like about Vampirella? Well, the outfit.
I'm thinking of Vampire.
Vampire? Yeah.
Vampirella is. So, okay, so she designed that. Wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I know. It's got, not only is it a boob window, it's an entire mid window.
Yeah, it's a set of windows. It's a lot of windows. More windows than house.
More of a skylight.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Like, I think it was Forrest J. Ackerman was the creator of that.
Okay.
And then she designed the outfit, and then Frank Frazetta drew the outfit, and then everyone went. One of the projects when I was talking with Giselle Legacy, who I did Exorcisters with, when we were trying to figure something to work on, she was kind of offered the chance to work on Vampirella if she had a take on it.
Okay.
And so I did some research on Vampirella. Going like, I don't know anything about Vampirella.
You read
comics like back in the day.
Sure.
Like you would think like by osmosis, you'd know who Vampirella was. And like you could draw Vampirella. You could point out Vampirella. Yeah. I think I've watched a movie about Vampirella. I got no idea what the fucking deal is with Vampirella.
No, yeah. I mean, I would recognize her, you know, in a second.
But what do you think Vampirella's deal is? Like,
I have no idea.
Where's she from?
I always thought she was like a host, like kind of like the Crypt Keeper.
Elvira?
Or something. Like a Crypt Keeper kind of thing in the comics.
Well, Elvira also did that kind of thing, yeah.
Well, she was a human person that was like introducing movies, though, wasn't she?
Yeah, though later on she took over House of Mystery from the character Kane in DC Comics.
Okay.
And so she would do that kind of thing. She did the same kind of jokes.
She didn't really. It was just her, yeah. But, yeah.
Well, Kane wasn't real either.
I know. I'm just saying, like,
unless, of course, biblically, you feel Kane was real. In but which
I thought,
case,
like,
that's fine.
I thought that Vampirella was basically like a Crypt Keeper sort of character and introduced stories in the Warren magazine.
You know, maybe she did.
I don't know anything about her. Literally nothing.
Well, I mean, I think
she is a comely lass. I'll say that.
Okay, so here was her origins. Just as a guess, where do you think she's from?
Where do I think she's from?
Yeah, where do you think she started her life? Like the character Vampirella.
Well, this is going to be kind of weird, but I always thought she was Spanish.
Okay. So she's from the planet Draculon.
Oh, I forgot this was put together by horror fans. So it's going to have
Forrest J. Ackerman.
It's going to have that goofy quality to it of like 50s horror.
I would have had dinner with Forrest J. Ackerman once, except I ended up with bronchitis, and so couldn't do it. Big drag.
Big Dragula.
Big Dragula, exactly. Yeah, one of his characters was Dr. Acula. That's right.
Okay.
So anyway,
there also was Dragula, which was a
different
hot,
situation.
Hot rod sort of thing. Yeah.
The hot rod. I thought it was like just in a dress. No. So anyway, this world Draculon was a world where blood flows like water.
Yes.
And where the people who live there, called the Vampiri,
yeah,
share traditional pyrrhic characteristics.
Okay.
But there was a drought, and it dried up the blood supply, wow, threatening them all. And so Vampirella starts her journey when an American space shuttle crashes.
Yeah.
There, hoping to save her people, she travels to Earth and becomes hunting dark remnants of her own race. And then Earth's vampires apparently originated from Dracula, a forgotten member of her thing. And so there you go. And so that was what it was. And then they kept changing her origin over and 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 over again. Huh. And that's why we can't remember her origin, because it, but that was like the original origin.
Okay. Okay.
So my
Draculon.
So my angle on it when I was pitching it to Giselle,
yes,
was because she did have at least six distinctly different origins. Was I was like, oh, that's her thing. Is like when she dies, she comes back with a completely different continuity, and she's got to figure out what her continuity is. And like, now you're a hero, now you're a villain, now you're a this, now you're a that. And so you get an opportunity to draw whatever you want and do whatever you want. But anytime she's killed, she comes back completely different.
Okay.
Yeah. But always sexy.
She's always got that window.
She's always got that suit that makes you like, you're looking at the magazine rack and go, huh, that one's up high. I wonder why that one's up high with all the other Warren books.
If you're a cosplayer, that's a costume that you can wear for a limited time in your life. And enjoy it while it lasts, is what I say.
Right. I'm trying to think who famously wore that.
Was it like the lady who did Elf, Wendy Pini, did she?
You want to say that, but she did. She was Red Sonja.
Oh, okay.
Her angle there.
Was it Flo? No, it wasn't Flo.
No. There was a Vampirella movie where Roger Daltrey was the villain.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, my God. There's a lot of Vampirella stuff. Anyway, she is the co-creator of that. So, you know, that's one of those things that not a lot of people knows.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they know her from her underground comics work.
Even
a
there.
A lot of like, you know, it ain't me, babe.
And yeah, I don't really know comics. Her. I don't really know her work. Like, you know, as interested as I was, most of my knowledge of underground comics comes via Robert Crumb, right? Like, so people that either I read in Weirdo magazine, you know, people like his friends or stuff that I kind of, you know, tangentially read, like, let's say, Zap magazine, where I get to read S. Clay Wilson and Spain and Victor Moscoso and all those people, or people like Justin Green with Binky Brown and the Holy and the Virgin Mary. It's those kind of, you know, because those were all kind of tangential to Crumb. He kind of knew about them because they're influential on Crumb, or Crumb was influential on them, or they worked together in some way. But because Trina Robbins had such an objection to Crumb, I just never came across her. So I knew people like Diane Newman and Dori Seda and all those kind of artists who were friends with Crumb and appeared in Weirdo. But I never knew Trina Robbins' work at all.
Yeah, I knew her from like her, she wrote Wonder Woman briefly.
Okay.
And so that's kind of where I got into it. And it was a very retro Wonder Woman that she did.
Sure.
And so she,
full of S&M.
Yeah, no, it would be, no, that would have been all right. where I found out the S&M Wonder Woman was, yeah, there used to be collections at the library of like old comics from like the 30s and 40s. And so you'd read those and go like, whoa. And it was all like a lot of, you know, racially not that great characters and stuff. And but yeah, it was like the spanky version of Wonder Woman for sure. But yeah, she did that. She did women's comics. But you're right, she spoke up against Robert Crumb, saying, I got a quote here, "It's weird to me how willing people are to overlook the hideous darkness in Crumb's work. What the hell is funny about rape and murder?" And it's like, yep, you know, you can go with that. The argument would be, you know, that if you can talk about anything, you can talk about everything. And by breaking down these social systems, you know, it frees people up to tell things. And now there's a market for women's comics over here that that people maybe buy because they bought a copy of Zap.
Yeah.
And went, oh, that's good. What else you got? We got women's comics. All right, mm-hmm, I'll buy that. But if it was just like straight out women's comics and nothing else, we're like, what's that?
Yeah. I mean, depends what. Yeah, obviously, yes.
It was, the point was to be offensive.
He was, yeah. It's of the time. That's the thing. Like, we weren't there, so we don't know how people who came out of the repressive 50s you know, how their reaction to growing up at a time
that when you're coming off of working at Hallmark.
Yeah, coming out of working at a Hallmark, coming out of a failed marriage, coming out of all these things, this, you know, really repressive life, you know, where you couldn't, you know, like, you come from a house where, like, it was just so repressive. Like, if, you know, you wonder why Robert Crumb has his weird sexual hangups, is because he grew up a sexually repressed young boy who could never talk about what he felt, and he had all these, you know, all these sort of hangups sort of turned into these weird sexual inclinations, you know, whether it's riding on women's backs and all that kind of stuff, which, if you've ever seen him do it, it's gross. Like, when you watch it, you're just like, well, like, why would you let someone do that to you? You know, but I guess if you think of it as playful.
I mean, if you're going through the list of fetishes people have, yeah, you know, just go, which ones aren't gross? Well, fair point.
Well, shoes.
Yeah, that's not gross. Shoes are great.
But he's, you know, he has like shoe fetishes. He has leg fetishes. He has like his interest in like that particular shape of a woman. You know, like all those sort of things are.
And then you go like, well, then he'd never have a healthy relationship with anybody or be able to raise a family. Oh, he did. It was fine, and his daughter seems well. And you know, sadly, his wife passed away recently. But they seem to have had a very happy marriage. Yep. And throw your hands up and go, I guess.
And I mean, the thing I always like, I don't,
you're not wrong, but yeah.
If people are mad at him about like my trouble with women and stuff like that, is, you know, those are things that he didn't want to talk about. Those are things that that Alien convinced him to publish. Like, she's like, oh, you got to get this stuff out there. You got to be honest about how you feel.
Well, it's, I mean, it is that, you know, feeling of like, because you go like, okay, do you talk about the stuff that you can't talk about? I don't know. Is it better to not put that stuff out there? Well, no. It's probably better to put that stuff out there and you can start a conversation going. Great. But then it becomes the norm and the accepted norm. And then people who don't come at it with the right angle, if there is a right angle, but with the correct angle of like, this is an examination of the dark feelings.
Yeah.
And instead you go like, this is the standard.
Yeah.
This is just funny stuff with like a lot of racial stereotypes and a lot of sexual stereotypes. And so I'm going to now do those sexual stereotypes and dark things. I'm going to approach it at the surface level.
Yeah.
Without even thinking of that. You just think, this is funny. Here's a drawing. And it's like, yeah, now that becomes the norm. Yeah. And then does that make things harder for people in general? Maybe.
Well, that's true. And I mean, where we are now, you know, the cultural filter has kind of washed a lot of that stuff away. Like, we don't really see the Crumb copycats. They're gone, you know, like the people that took that stuff in a way that, you know, I mean, obviously Crumb was doing things that were offensive, whether, you know, his portrayal of black people and stuff like that was often done in a caricatured way that partly was a reflection of his love of the art from another era. You know, but also his playing with stereotypes of the time.
Yeah.
But,
and it's more offensive to be slightly racist or like full racist. Like, you go so far.
Yeah.
And you pull like a South Park, you know, or you know, you go like, oh, I'm going to try and make things, you know, you try and make things, you know, right, but you still play into the stereotypes and that feels like it's almost worse.
Yeah.
Because it's something you can't complain about. It's a tough one.
It's a tough.
You just do your art, and then you go like, I stand behind it, or I don't stand behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
And she did her art too.
Yeah,
you know, and her stuff. A lot of it was, you know, groundbreaking. She did the first comic with like an open lesbian that was in it, and you know, just again, she was the first woman to write Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Many other things, and then wrote some really good books about the history of women in comics and you know, kind of brought back characters that people had totally forgotten.
Yeah.
And you know,
I think for Trina Robbins, I think the most unfortunate thing for her as an artist is that a lot of what she was interested in, it's gone. That's a bygone world, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, it would be nice if someone like her could have been drawing when Millie the Model or romance comics were still a thing, that you could explore that world in a more mature way, but the you know, just the comics market had become so narrow casted that she. What are you
going? I was going to ask you a rock and roll question.
A rock and roll question, okay.
Yeah, which is who are the ladies of the canyon?
The ladies of the canyon. You mean like Joni Mitchell?
Yeah.
Well,
who were they?
Who were they?
Well, as in, like, what does that mean?
So it's referenced to Laurel Canyon.
Okay.
Which was near L.A. So it was just kind of a hippie musician enclave that lived there. So Crosby, Stills, and Nash were in that area.
Right.
Frank Zappa had a house there or a cabin. Joni Mitchell lived there with Graham Nash. And so it was just kind of like it became sort of a catch-all term for a particular
Trina Robbins styles. Was one of them.
So she lived in Laurel Canyon.
She was, it says here, I'm reading the Wikipedia.
Sure.
Robbins was intimately involved with the 1960s rock scene, where she was close friends with Jim Morrison and the Byrds.
Okay.
She was the first of the three Ladies of the Canyon in Joni Mitchell's classic song from the album of the same name.
Mm.
And in the late 60s, she ran an East Village Manhattan clothing boutique called Broccoli that made clothes for Mama Katz, Donovan, David Crosby, and others.
So that was in New York that she did that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She wrote a memoir entitled Last Girl Standing that was released in 2017 from Fantagraphic.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's good they did that. Yeah, no, she's a, you know, to me, she's like a historical footnote in a way, like, I never really experienced her work,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's not a, I don't think of it as a blind spot on my part. It just wasn't not available, you know, I didn't see it.
You'd have to like get it from a head shop or something that still had copies. It wasn't it wasn't reproduced a lot. I knew her like later on when she was making a lot of paper doll comics,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing.
I think that's more where I think of her as sort of like this sort of throwback kind of style.
Right. My feeling was that what she was trying, it was a lot of you know, and again, she was an innovator in the time of the 60s and the early 70s.
Sure.
But then by the time that I became kind of aware of her, it was things were better back in the day. and it was like, I don't think things were better back in the day. It's like, I didn't really buy the argument.
Mm.
I was like, we got to make more comics for girls. Okay.
I think that makes sense.
That makes sense. But then it's like, so we're going to make cartoons with paper, comics with paper dolls in them. I don't think that's necessarily where, you know, girls are at right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm married to someone who, you know, kind of fell hard for comic books.
Yeah.
And she fell hard for like Perez and Wolfman's Teen Titans and the X-Men. Okay. And that was just like kind of, you know, badass women who were, you know, doing stuff in these stories, and the idea of, you know, would you like paper dolls in your comics? So like, no, maybe not. Well, and then drawing like Wonder Woman in the old oldie style.
I'm gonna disagree. I mean, I think
disagree with me, please.
Well, I just think that, you know, interested for women interested or girls interested in superheroes, I think is very minority. Like, I think that, you know, I think if there was genres like there are in like Japan where you have like the, you know, I don't know the names of the genres there, but, you know, they have their romance comics of, you know, whatever they are, you know what I mean? Their names.
Think like of specific names.
Shouju or whatever.
I'm going to go get Nina. Hold on.
she's away in Minnesota.
I think she
can't help us.
She's back now.
Oh, she's back. Okay. Yep. I've just been seeing the aftermath of photos.
She posted pictures of being back home and her bird getting bird dust everywhere.
So I just think that, you know, if comics in North America hadn't so narrowed, just because of the way the direct market worked, hadn't so narrowed their focus to just superheroes and had like some romance comics and stuff like that, not paper doll comics, but, you know, true kind of heartbreak comics or whatever that girls would enjoy. When Eve was going through her teens, she loved that sort of manga. She would read like Fruits Basket and all those sort of things.
Cool.
And Inuyasha, whatever. I guess Inuyasha is sort of action, but it also has like the girl element to it, with the romance between her and Inuyasha, between, I can't remember the name of the female character, but it's just sort of, I just think that it's just unfortunate that here someone like Trina Miller, or not Trina Miller, Trina Robbins, and lots of other people could have fit into this, into a different sort of alternate universe sort of comics world in North America.
Yeah, my feeling at the time was it was more of a focus on the past and a retro.
Yeah, thing. Well, that's a problem, right? Like, that it's not like it should have been like it would be silly to be doing like still doing 50s. Comics, you know, why doesn't he love me sort of things, but you could update that to different generations.
And now, you know, one of the most successful artists is Raina Tegelmeyer, and that story's of, you know, young women, and there is like some romance stuff, like her comic Drama is, you know, about like, you know, falling in love in a
there is that one person doing mainstream books in North America.
But yeah. They are the number one person in North America, like, yes. As in
sales speak.
I was watching.
Well, to show you, there's a market for that kind of with young women. You know, like, it's that, you know, they're not that interested in like superheroes and stuff like that, but they'll react to,
you know, technically though,
yeah,
they are technically
okay.
And I'm going to go on this technical point,
okay?
Because I just read
a big air quote around it.
Heidi McDonald just put up a thing that Brian Hibbs posted about the 2023 kind of comic sales.
Okay.
And far, far and away, like not even close.
Yeah.
It's Scholastic. Mm. And it's basically Dogman.
Okay.
Who is technically a superhero.
That's a boy thing though.
But it's not.
Oh, is that right?
But it's not a boy thing. No, it's okay. That's definitely an all ages thing. Okay. 100%.
Not all ages, but okay.
Well, not all ages. All, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Gender.
Yeah.
But you know, the ages do go up. But like the most recent Dogman was like, you know, about 1,200,000 copies sold.
Wow.
And then in the top 10 graphic novels, I think Dogman is 8 of them.
Wow.
And I think Captain Underpants might be one more of them. And then you're getting into Reyna, and then you're getting from there, but it's like, yeah. And then so far down the line, then it's like Marvel. And then so far down the line, it's like DC.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is what's selling now. It's like, these are the books that are selling. And no, Dogman for sure is like, that's not boy. Mm. That's, you know, all around.
Hmm.
Captain Underpants, more of a boy thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess with the animals, it can be a little more across the spectrum, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's interesting.
So there are comics for girls right now, and they are showing. They're selling out there. So, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. I hope she was happy with that. I think though, yeah, when I was, in the times that I met her, it was a lot of comics aren't what they used to be. They should go back to what they were.
Yeah.
We should have a lot of, you know, masked women who, you know, are kicking ass and stockings and high heels and whatnot. But She was good. She was cool. And there we go. So go check some of her stuff out. Do it. You should do it. Go check it out.
Okay, Mr.
You might enjoy those Wonder Woman comics that she did. I think she did with Colleen Duran. And they're retro fun. It's Wonder Woman from the 30s, but without the spanking.
Oh.
Yeah. I wonder when Wonder Woman stopped with the spanking.
What? Why?
No, when.
Oh, when. I don't know.
Maybe it was World War II. In
the Wortham years?
Huh. I wonder. I don't think she was like going into World War II going, we got to beat Hitler. But before we beat Hitler, let's do a little spanking. And whack-a-da-whack-a-da-whack-a-da.
Yeah, I think it was mostly the minority interest of the original writer. And once other people took over the reins,
mm-hmm.
they kind of threw that out the window. And maybe people realized, oh, wait, this is not going to sell to kids like this.
It's so weird that he is the inventor of Wonder Woman with the lasso of truth and also invented the lie detector.
Oh yeah,
that's really interesting.
Yeah,
it would be like if Bob Kane had also invented the utility belt in real life. Yeah,
rather than just inspire it.
Yes, I always used to think like, yeah, Batman doesn't need to fight anyone. He's got knockout gas. You're on a roof.
Mm.
Drop your knockout gas down. Okay. Well,
would it work on a roof?
You don't think you could drop your knockout gas from the roof?
I guess it depends where the wind is blowing.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But like the Penguin's down there. He's robbing a bank. Well, throw your knockout gas at him. Done. That's the end of that.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
But isn't part of his thing to strike fear in the hearts of criminals?
Well, knock him out and then hang him upside down. That's scary.
Is it scary to hang upside down?
I think Batman feels it is. That feels like it's his.
Isn't that how he sleeps? Technically, it's true.
Everyone, you're not wrong. Technically, you're not wrong. That is not good keeping the secret identity, Batman. That was a weird movie. You watch it again and just go, huh.
Yeah, and I didn't like it at the time, to be honest with you. Wasn't a fan. It had a Prince soundtrack, and not a very good one. I felt like kind of like, I've run out of ideas. Let me just throw whatever.
Batman.
Yeah.
He looked like a good Joker, though.
Scandalous.
When he put on the face. The Joker face, it was like, oh, you look like the
Joker.
Yeah,
it was good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty good looking video. Turn the sound off and you're fine. I was actually okay with it. It was one of the first those songs where you'd just be like talking in the middle of it. I'm like, well, stop this. Let's get to the song. Vicky Vale.
Yeah, I think for me, Batman suffered a little bit of pre-movie hype. And there was a lot of talk going around about this Batman sort of being based in Frank Miller's iteration of the character in the Dark Knight books. And so I was really thinking that we were going to get something that was sort of from the Dark Knight books on screen, which would be pretty amazing to see. And it wasn't. It was pretty much like a make-em-up-as-they-went movie. Mm-hmm. And I think was there a writer's strike when they did that film?
I don't know. It's a fine question.
Yeah. Because it does feel like a lot of make-em-up on the spot. Like, what if you try this, Jack? Like, what if you... Yeah. Or Jack saying, what if I say... Never mess with another man's rhubarb or whatever he says, you know, in the movie.
Rub another man's rhubarb. Rubber, yeah. Yeah. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Yeah.
I don't know. What?
Are you a poet and didn't know it?
Yeah. Flip flop butterfly. Stick a butter in your eye. What? I don't know.
Yeah, it just has that feeling to it. And rather than being like in retrospect, Why do you want a serious Batman? But instead of that, getting what I wanted, the serious Batman, it's kind of like a weird mix of like, you know, Tim Burton's love of grotesqueries and then the 60s Batman.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is. It's kind of like a goof-em-up, but kind of gross. You know, that's
I wonder
both,
if
both had, those movies, both Batman
if
and Batman
If they had
Returns.
Done like a Dark Knight level Batman, what the hell would that have been like to people? Like,
and they wouldn't have understood it. Like, I'm wrong. They're right to not have done it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I do think that I haven't read it in a long time. Let me just.
The Dark Knight?
Yeah. I haven't read it since I read it way back when.
It's Batman beating up the X-Men, basically, the first issue. It is.
He's mad at them.
Yeah, he is. They're mutants. They're mutants that all have Cyclops' mask on them. And it's like, these mutants have taken over and things are lousy now and you need to return to the old-timey. He's basically Trina Robbins.
It's Trina Robbins writing this?
You need the old-timey return and then he came and just like beat them up.
Funny. If it had come out and it had been like a serious Dark Knight movie with an old Batman... And, you know, I think it would have been good. Like, it's a good story.
You know what I've been like?
I don't know if it's the... I think some things like that work better in comics, though, because there's something about comics where you can be... It's kind of goofy, kind of over the top. You can have Batman fight Superman and you don't go, this is dumb.
The drawings in Dark Knight were weird.
Oh, but they're great.
They're great, but they're weird.
Yeah.
They're not the slick, Batman... Jim Aparo or even Neil Adams. Which they're not at all that Batman that you're used to if you're used to it in the comics.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's this?
Mm-hmm. But that's what I reacted to is at that age because I never liked those things you're talking about, right? Like,
and Batman was so old. He was so old that he's probably 10 years younger than us. So old. Where he's like, oh, I can't stand up. Oh, my back. I'm in my mid-40s.
What?
I can't. Oh, stupid old man. My bones grind together.
But when I read crackle, it, I was crackle, like, oh, he's so pop. Old.
Oh, so old. So old. I could barely eat my mush.
It works as a comic. But I think if you... did that and like tried to like extrapolate it out into like an hour and a half movie, it would just be absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. It would be like if you hey, they made a Get Smart movie. Oh, cool. And it's all like just spy stuff with no jokes. Like it's just played completely fucking straight.
Yeah.
And like, what's this?
Because you have to have a touchstone for people, and people's touchstone for Batman is the 60s Batman TV show.
Yeah.
That is people's touchstone.
Yeah.
They've never read the comics. They have no idea about that stuff, right?
So no, why would they?
Yeah. So the idea of like doing a serious Batman is just
I remember
stupid.
Like they were interviewing like Adam West and he was like upset that he wasn't offered the role. And it was like, I don't know why they're thinking of doing Batman without me. And like everyone's like agreeing. I'm like, what?
Well, he would have been great in the Dark Knight version because he was also old.
And then he has no sense of humor, and he's just like old and. Oh my gosh! Could you imagine? I mean, I think that's what you do is you take one of the older Batmans if you're going to do that, and you're doing like a Batman Beyond or one of these Batman set in the future things. Yeah, get one of the older Batmans to just play themselves.
The only trouble with the Dark Knight is that it has a female Robin.
Mm.
Women can't fight.
Mm. Good for you. Good for you.
It just shows you the difference in time, right? When that happened, everyone was like, oh, that's a cool idea. That's fun. Yeah. Not, what are women doing?
What's the Joker do? He kills David Letterman. He kills David Letterman? What? Okay. Fair enough.
I guess that kind of happened in the Joker.
Sure did. Yeah. That's what happened, all right.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess you haven't seen the trailer for the new one, eh?
I haven't. Do they have any music in it?
Yeah.
Oh. Maybe I will watch it. I don't, you know, like I'm not a big...
It's all music.
I watch trailers at the theaters.
Yeah.
Like I saw...
Then you're going to see it there.
I saw a different trailer for Furiosa last night.
Sure.
Which further whetted my whistle. And then I saw a trailer for The Crow. Which
Where are we seeing more Crow?
Because to be honest,
what's
like...
What's the point of The Crow?
Are we it's too soon. Are we really over The Crow? I'm still not over that movie. I'm still not over what happened.
I mean, we've had a TV series since then.
Oh, I don't even know. I didn't know that.
I've had to, you know, reroute my daily doings because of The Crow. Where I've gone, like, curse you, Crow.
That's right.
But what's the point of The Crow? It's like, so he gets revenge because his girlfriend's killed. Oh, that doesn't seem...
I didn't know he was dead. I somehow missed that the first time around.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But this movie makes a point, the trailer made a point that he's dead and that he's coming back for revenge. And
well,
he's
that's
dead.
The whole thing. It's like The Crow brings your soul back from the afterworld. Mm, So The Crow brings his soul back and always has. That's always been the case.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, and he's kind of like, oh, so he's invulnerable. All right. So what do I... Again, sorry. Why do I care about this in a post-John Wick world? Why do I care about this? He can kill anybody. So why... Again, sorry. Hello. Hi. Me. I've seen various Crow movies and TV shows. Why am I... Why do I care about this? Oh, boy. It's really something.
Time to milk it again.
Yeah. They can't kill him. So who cares? What's my emotional journey on this? Mm-hmm. Where are we going? We're also in a post... Deadpool world.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen parodies of it. We've seen it from all angles. We've seen multiple John Wick movies. I've seen Death Wish. Where am I in this? What's my investment here? What's the angle? What's the twist? What's the deal?
Yeah. So I wasn't so excited about that one, but then they also had the trailer for that vampire one I was talking about with the little girl who's has fangy teeth. But it looked fun. Like a fun romp. It's by
I can't
the same,
argue with fangy teeth.
It's the same people who did that film, Hide and Seek. Was that what it's called? The one where the...
Tag?
No, the one where the woman gets married.
She's
and,
in the Ready or Not, I think, or something like
Ready
that.
Ready or Not, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Where she, it's same. Her wedding night and she's got a family. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, that's a fun movie. Yeah. That's a fun movie. Speaking of gross scenes. Anyway.
Yeah. But, I always think of that and Game Night. And like Tag as like this like kind of trilogy almost of like those are weird movies
not related but
they're not
sort of related
but
sort
they
of
all
related.
Have gross out scenes they all are like well these all seem to be seen movies for adults that are just having some fun and don't really fit in with anything else and they're a little low budget and all right more of this more of these weird over the top things.
I don't remember Game Night having a really gross out scene. What was that?
A couple of things. There was one where they had to like heal an injury or something that was kind of a gross out. But there's also someone falling into, I think, like an airplane engine that was.
Oh,
like, Shocking.
You didn't know him.
There was some gross out in Game Night. There was.
I guess a dog getting covered in blood was gross.
Sure. I can look up Game Night and I can tell you scenes. But there were scenes, yes.
That's fine.
There was shock.
Yeah, you were shocked. You clutched your pearls.
Yeah, it was kind of, again, it was like Hangover level shock, where it was like, oh, I'm like, all right. Make comedies like this occasionally. Make horror movies like this occasionally.
Yeah, yeah.
Do it. That sounds good.
Now that you say, anyway, it's from the same people, so I have high hopes for that little girl vampire film. As she
Did
says.
You like Let the Right One In? When you saw it?
I never saw that movie.
Oh.
I keep meaning to watch it, but...
Oh, I would be shocked if that wasn't on Tubi
at some
point.
It is on Tubi, actually. That's where I keep meaning to watch
there's
it.
There's the European version, and then the
European
the,
version is
there's
on there,
the... Yeah. And you know what? The North American one's not bad either. Mm. But watch the European version first. I think you would quite enjoy it.
I know. It's one of those things where you're like, why haven't I watched this movie? It's kind of weird. It's when it came out, I just didn't have time for such things. And now I do, sort of. Now I do.
Good.
I learned something...
Tell me about
it. I learned something in the last couple of years.
All right.
It's taken me a while to realize it, but it occurred to me this weekend while I was struggling on a home project. When I say struggling, I mean I was struggling.
No.
And it's that YouTube videos lie. Like, all those YouTube videos are like, hey, want to put some wires through your wall? Here's how you do it. Boop, boop, boop. And then you just do that, and you twist this, and then you boop, boop, boop. And there you go, everyone. And then you go, oh, okay. I mean, I don't know. I don't know as well as this guy, so it's probably going to take me, what, 3 hours to do this? 3 hours probably to do this job? Yeah, 3 hours. 6 hours! So yeah, this, I decided that I didn't like, you know, we got a new television.
Okay,
and it's big. I think it's 85 inches.
Wow.
I could be wrong. It might be 75, but
well,
it's
all,
big.
We're all coming to your house. Yeah, you can measure it. Better not brag.
You can measure it. Anyway, it's hanging on the wall. Lisa calls her living room the sports bar now because it's got this ginormous thing hanging on the wall. But all these wires were coming off of it, right? Because you have like your wires, you got your cable for the television, you got, you know, like your electrical, power cord. Mm-hmm. And then I got the power cord because I bought a surround sound, not a surround sound, but a sound bar. So then there was that hanging down. And then I had perched in a dangerous way our Blu-ray player and our cable box on the mantelpiece underneath the television. And they had to get out of the way because the sound bar was on there now and it's too big to let those guys. So get out of here, Blu-ray. So they're just like thrown down. They had no purpose. I had to unplug them. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to put like an electrical outlet behind the television.
Okay.
So then I don't have to have like
that'll show
wires hanging down.
Yeah, that won't show them.
And then I was like, well, while I'm doing it, I'll put HDMI cables up through as well. Because then I can plug in that stuff and then have my boxes on the floor.
And it all worked out perfectly.
Down below.
It all was fine.
Nothing went wrong.
Good stuff. Glad to hear it. Well, sorry it wasn't an interesting story.
So I start and I'm like, okay, I've got... It's over at our fireplace, which isn't really a fireplace. It's like a gas thing, right?
You just burn evidence.
I burn, so we do. Neighbor's evidence, but whoever.
Just at work, they tell you, take these papers home, Dave. You never saw them.
My bathroom looks like Trump's at Mar-a-Lago. Everyone's evidence there ready to burn through the winter. So,
one of his wife's in the tub. Just wait until they can bury her on the golf course.
So I...
ground's too cold.
So I thought, well, I'll just go straight down the wall, right to the floor, over to the outlet.
Yeah.
Perfect. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. So then I...
Right in your wound.
I cut a hole in the wall. I cut two holes in the wall for the, okay. where the, they call it old, I think they call it like old work boxes or something like that, which doesn't make any sense. They should be new work boxes. Because what they are basically kind of floating electrical boxes that clamp to the wall. You have a screw that you screw and it has these little arms that pinch the drywall and stay in place. You don't need to have them attached to a stud or anything.
Nor should you.
So I made these holes.
Okay.
Fully expecting to go straight down. So then I thought, well, I'm going to have to drill a hole in the bottom. So what I'm going to do is I'll cut a part along the bottom because I'm going to put new baseboards down that are a bit taller. And so I'll just cut a little below that and they'll be hidden when I put the new baseboards on. So I cut a hole so I could see the wires when they came down. Well, the wires didn't come down.
Ooh.
Because there was a stud. I knew there was a stud there. So I went to drill out this stud. But it turns out it was two studs. It was two 2x4s put together. Oh. So
it's like us in this room right now.
It was super hard to... Two studs, yes. you can't lie. Why not tell the truth sometimes?
Sure.
It was just like two... I couldn't... Because I was trying to drill from the side and it was just impossible. And then I found out there was another 2x4 blocking me going down.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, oh, this is didn't work out.
Oh, fudge.
So then I was trying to drill from the side into the stud, but I couldn't do that either because the angle was such that if I drilled through, I would be drilling through out my house. So I was like, oh, this is not working. So in the end, I had to cut this like 10 by 10 patch out of my wall. They just cut it out and then just do all the wiring like that. Just pull it, drill a hole, pull it through, go down.
Ugh.
By the time I finished, my hands were like, felt like they were blistered. Like they were just like so sore because I was pulling all this wire and doing all this stuff. And anyway, I got it all done. I got the only problem I had was that the available old work boxes that you can get like locally all have like backs on them, which wouldn't work with the HDMI cables. Because basically what they were was like this little, you had like a full-on HDI cable in your wall. It plugged into the back of this adapter, which was in this kind of wall plate. And then you, so that was behind the wall. And then you just plug another one into that. And then that would make the connection between them to go down to the other one down below, or you plugged another one into there. And so it was so big, it just stuck out too much. So I found on Amazon these like just wall plates, just like a plain wall plate with nothing behind it. They're called low voltage wall plates or something like that. Low voltage.
Had you seen someone else use these on YouTube or something, or you just looked up your needs and this was it?
I hadn't seen anyone use those, I don't think.
Okay. But where did you get the idea to use those?
I was just looking. I just looked for low voltage because I was trying to find some way that. And then these images came up, and I was like, "Oh, cool!" The one I found was only I could only buy in the States was like $7 plus that's American shipping. And then shipping. And I was like, "Ugh!" So then I looked in Canada; it was $25 each. I was like, "Oh, I don't want to pay $25 for a piece of plastic." And then, when I was at the gym, I had a bit more time. I paged down, and then I found ones that were like normal human prices. So I bought those. And they came and they worked just perfect. Like they just went into the wall, these little plastic things. Similar idea. They have like these little arms that go up and down and you just turn a screw and it pulls them against the drywall and held it in place. And then I just put the, and now it looks great. Except for the fact that I've got this like hole in the wall. I did put the drywall back in, but it just like has this where I've cut it. It's kind of clear. And then the bottom part, because I haven't got the new baseboards yet, it's also kind of noticeable. Other than that, and then all the tools I left laying everywhere, I still haven't cleaned them up because I've been too busy. Because the other thing I discovered was that when we did our bathroom, I may have mentioned this, I discovered that if we because of the height the tile's at now, if we put our mirror in, it will cover where our light went in the wall. So I have to move that up. But I found one of these old style workbox things that's a light for lights, so I can use that to clamp to the drywall and then put the lamp and the light in there. So yeah, that'll work eventually.
I'm looking up now at the ceiling here and like how many lights we have, and we've got one light working. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 7 lights fixtures here.
Yeah.
One is working. We agreed that we were going to have kind of a light bulb session in the near future, and we will. I'm saying that out loud now.
Yeah, say it out loud. Have you got the lights? Have you got the lights?
Not yet, no.
No, that's a problem.
Yep.
That's a definite
spanner
in the works.
I'll tell you why. Because everyone that owes us money is on a 2-week vacation.
Oh, is that right?
We got 3 different things that owe us money that are all on 2-week vacations.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, could I speak to the person who's, it's just that was the person.
That's the one person.
That's basically the one person. I can pass you along to the blah, blah, blah. Well, that's all fine, but they can't make any decisions, choices, or find out what's wrong. Like, that's great. And it's like, it's all huge things too. All like, you know, big companies.
Yeah.
But like everyone went on their 2-week vacation and they're back Monday, so we'll see what happens. But up until that point, we don't have light bulb money.
Yeah.
It's funny though, like your bills, everyone who works on the bills, They put in the 7-hour days.
They don't go on 2 weeks vacation. And if they do, someone else takes over the building.
I got to tell you, they got a work ethic that can't be beat.
Payroll, they are apt to disappear for
gone
months on end.
Gone drinking.
But what's weird is
they got a fishing line tied to their big toe and they're lying back.
But here's the thing. I work for a big company.
Yeah.
I've never had...
And you want a big cereal.
I've never not gotten paid because payroll is on 2 weeks vacation.
Mm.
I still get my money every second week.
Yeah,
although, to be fair, maybe they time it because I get paid basically every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So they time it so that person's away during that 2-week stretch that we don't get paid. So when they get back, they just quickly do it on the Thursday.
I do not know, sir. I do not know.
Kind of silly.
All I know is everyone's enjoying a nice vacation. Good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them. I'm gonna go to the land of letters, if that's okay.
If you want.
All right. By the way, what would you call, what segment of the show was that we just did? What was that called?
Oh, Dear John.
Dear John. Hope you enjoyed Dear John.
We can still call it that because I still haven't quite finished the bathroom. I still have to put the
nice.
I still have to put the toilet roll holder on the wall and get the mirror up and the light.
Cool.
We're going to get a new light to go over the vanity.
I got
to
figure out the light bulbs in my upstairs bathroom. They're bizarre. There's like, let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, Five. There's five different types of lights in our upstairs bathroom. Hmm. It's a large bathroom, but it's not that big.
Yeah.
It's not five light bulb, different types of light bulbs big. And each of those light bulbs has multiple light bulbs. It's just, again, you throw up your hands and just go, light bulbs, just regular light bulbs, it's fine. Just consistency, consistency. Yeah. Beautiful, sweet, sweet consistency. Well, this is fancy, and it's like, God damn it.
You know what's funny is, well, not funny, but
consistency.
Interesting. We were looking, I was kind of looking for a vanity light, and we were at Canadian Tire the other day and on the weekend, because we went there. We went there to go to a hot dog stand. Apparently, there's a very popular hot dog stand at the Canadian Tire in Abbotsford.
Oh.
So we went there. It's Scully's Dogs or some kind of name like that.
Yeah.
This is kind of an interesting dude. Interesting dude.
Was he flirty with you? Like sandwich shop?
No, he's not flirty that way. He's more kind of like, he's more kind of fun. He's kind of a fun guy. He's got a lot of posters up on his walls of his restaurant. Some are like do's and don'ts of hot dogs.
Okay.
You know, like no ketchup after the age of 18 or the age of 16 or something like that, you know, and you can't use like a cloth napkin when you're eating a hot dog. Don't write thank you notes if you get invited to a hot dog cookout. Just things like that, you know, and it's kind of silly stuff.
And this is at a Canadian Tire?
Yeah.
Okay, I got his Instagram here.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all.
And what's interesting about the guy is he donated his kidney to a customer.
On a hot dog?
What do you mean, on a hot dog?
Did he give it, like, served it with, like, on a hot dog?
No, he donated it as a medical
procedure. Thing. That's fine. Yeah, yeah. Then.
He, okay, I guess this guy, he didn't even know the guy. He was just a customer.
Oh, wow.
He found out he needed a kidney. So he went in and he got himself tested.
Oh, my gosh. Found out
he was compatible and he gave this guy his kidney.
On the one hand, that's beautiful. On the second hand, what do you tip?
And so he has, like, on the wall of his stand, he's got, like, posters for people who need kidneys.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's like, you know, can you help these people get yourself tested? He says, you only, in your life, you'll only use 4% of your second kidney. You know, so.
Okay. The time that you are using that 4%, though, is it really important that you have that
4%? I don't know.
Because that could be a very important time.
I don't know.
The only time that you use your parachute is when you're coming down from the plane.
There's a woman at church who donated her kidney to her husband, and she seems fine.
Oh, I know a couple of people fine. Who have donated their kidneys, and they're all
this guy seemed to be fine. But what's funny above the above where it it showed like cash, credit card, debit card, kidney, these little symbols along.
If you hit the wrong one,
if you donate a kidney, you get hot dogs for life.
Okay, but if you donate a kidney, should you be eating hot dogs for life?
Why not?
Because it's a poison filtering system.
Hot dogs aren't poison. What a weird thing to say. What do you think hot dogs are poison? Why are you looking at me like that?
Because they have nitrates in them.
Eh.
And nitrates are poison.
Nitrates aren't poison.
Yes, nitrates are poison.
Huh.
Yeah.
I think we seem to be all doing fine.
Oh, well, then it's fine then.
Yeah. I doubt it's in those levels that'll kill you. That's like saying potatoes have arsenic, which they do, but everyone eats potatoes.
Okay. All right. I don't want to make you feel bad about nitrates, but look it up if you feel like it sometime. All right, so we're on to...
I don't have food panic. It's another blessing of my blithe, complacent stroll through life.
That's fine. That's fine. That's okay. The Sneaky Dragon letters page, we asked a couple questions last week. One is, what are nitrates? Oh, damn it. Now we're back into that.
Oh, my gosh.
Who's a performer that is always the glue? Is that like a person that holds things together?
Yeah.
And what are your summer plans? Very nice. Right. So Marcus Harwell writes us and says, because we talked flags.
Flags.
Regarding flag talk, I'm reminded of Scott Thompson as Buddy Cole in the Kids in the Hall sketch, thusly saying, there's a big hoopla down south about some wag burning the flag. Oh, Jesus, I didn't know what all the fuss was about. We burn our flag all the time to keep warm. This was part of the I can make the word Canadian sound sexy monologue. And as to the question of the week, Octavia Spencer, The Help, Snowpiercer, Ugly Betty, dozens more. Honestly, she works a lot. Can anchor a cast or lead it and is always memorable. Serious glue.
Okay.
Good for them. The other question, trips back to New York City to see family or top priorities. Plus music, writing, and art projects are in the works. Hopefully all in one of it comes together. Well, New York, you know, they say if you can make it there, the credits are transferable to other places. Our pal Edward Dragansky writes us, and so I'm going to lift this up so that I can get a closer look, because there's many words. As much as I still enjoy the Marvel Cinematic Universe with all its myriad episodes and films, I feel a lack of the leadership that not one, but two characters, signature characters provided, Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans, both bowed out at the same time. Both are essential glue to that cinematic juggernaut.
I see. What a sneaky way to get in that answer.
Mm-hmm. That started with Downey Jr. back in 2008. Mm-hmm. They both kind of tag-teamed their leadership responsibilities, but I feel that Downey Jr. was essentially the godfather of the MCU. It's hard to imagine anyone else in that role. I'm fine with the decisions made with their exits. The stories were fitting and heroic, but that's not the way comics treat their characters. There's always a way out and a way back in. I have no solution to their absence, only that the void of leadership finds a way of being filled and some new glue fills that vacancy. Maybe a certain stretchy guy who knows everything will be up to the challenge. It is wide open. Yeah, my feeling about that is when I started liking comics, Captain America and Iron Man were kind of the Dullsville characters.
Especially Captain America.
Which is why, you know, when Marvel needed money, they sold... You know, they sold off their popular characters like your Spider-Man and your X-Men.
Yeah.
But, like, they kept Captain America and Iron Man because, like, what are you going to do? Who cares?
Yeah.
And it just happened that they got good filmmakers making good films about them, and then they became popular. But at the time when I started reading comics in the 80s, who cared about Captain America or Iron Man at all? So I'm curious now that they're bringing the X-Men back or in some form, maybe that's what they're going to try and do here.
Sure.
I don't know.
We have no idea. No one's telling us.
I just know the X-Men animated series they're doing is doing quite well right now. So, you know, it's getting people excited about the X-Men. And also, it looks like that Deadpool movie looks good.
Is that right? That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen anything for
it. Oh, it looks tasty. Go to a movie theater. You'll see a trailer.
I was in a movie theater.
Yeah, you should go more.
I know. I'm going to go see Civil War this weekend.
Well, maybe you'll see a trailer.
I might.
I always thought of actors who don't have that certain sex appeal or star power status to rely upon to be great glue actors. It sure helps to be easy on the eyes when on film. But also, we have so many actors who make up for that with their stellar performances, but were never considered sexy, like movie stars were in the Golden Age. Actors like Gene Hackman, Kathy Bates, Jeff Goldblum. Later on, they found him sexy. Paul Giamatti, Bill Murray, and Frances McDormand come to mind. I look forward to when actors like this come together and glue a cast together.
Frances McDormand is sexy in Blood Simple. Gene Hackman was seen as a leading man in his day, as like Dustin Hoffman. Yes, it blows our mind now, but at the time they were considered to be, you know, leading men material.
Yep. And, you know, Jeff Goldblum in your Jurassic Parks took the shirt off and had the thing and...
Talked about math.
There you go. Oh, actually, and Jeff Goldblum, honestly, in Earth Girls Are Easy, I remember when he stepped out of the little chamber there, and I heard a bunch of people in the audience go, woo-hoo-hoo! A bunch of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, but he also, yeah, he looked a little geeky. If you looked at him in Buckaroo Banzai, that's a big nerd. But he could play both sides. I do plan on maybe traveling to Waco, Texas in the upcoming months to see the Dr. Pepper Museum.
Oh.
I went there a week without mentioning Dr. Pepper.
Wouldn't be the show.
I went there many years ago with my first wife, who also worked for Dr. Pepper, and the museum was an embarrassing wreck. About the time I was let go from Dr. Pepper, so there were a lot of execs who had way more money than me. They decided to invest their time and money in a brand new museum down in Waco, and in doing so, asked for my help. One of the chairs for the museum, who was the head of PR when I was at Dr. Pepper, asked if I could donate any art I had for the museum. I gave him a huge box of original art to use, and about a year later, was given the art back. He told me I should visit the new place, since a great deal of my work is adorning the exhibits of the new museum. Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
I feel it's been long enough that you can understand how curious I am to see what he meant. If it's worth seeing, I'll post photos to Facebook or something. Please do. Please give us a link.
I'm curious.
Now, as to our very nerdy discussion from last week, me and Ian, about the Sentinels in X-Men number 59 and the destruction into the sun.
Oh, boy.
We were both kind of right.
Okay, I'm just going to recline for a bit here.
Please do. Think of sports. Their programming is skewed once they realize Larry Trask is in fact a mutant who has disguised it by wearing a pendant. Larry Trask is also the son of Bolivar Trask, who invented the Sentinels. The following is from the Marvel database. With Trask outed as a mutant, the Sentinels refuse to follow any further orders for him and instead become fixated on carrying out the last order of a supposed human to capture all remaining mutants and destroy them. The Sentinels begin to administer first aid to human Judge Chalmers as a result of their programming to protect humans. Chalmers tells Cyclops that the only way to beat the Sentinels is with logic. Cyclops then suggests to the Sentinels that the most efficient way to accomplish their goals would be to eliminate the source that causes all mutation. Meanwhile, the Sentinels ponder Cyclops' suggestion and realize that it is the very sun that is the cause of mutants on Earth. The entire Sentinel fleet blasts off into space in an attempt to destroy the sun, a mission that is destined to end in failure and the Sentinels' destruction. I have a feeling we'll be seeing these guys again in the future of the MCU. I looked at the sun this past Monday during the eclipse, and I didn't see any Sentinels coming or going, so I guess we're safe. But I'm not a mutant either. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's raining here, and I'm glad it held off for the eclipse's Path of Totality, which was awesome. But I do wish for clear skies and beautiful spring weather to all my fellow sneakers out there. Louise? But no response from Louise so far.
Let me just say, speaking of Path of Totality, that Ed did some fun takes on that with he did a little bit of playing around with images from Marvel Comics and adding the Path of Totality.
He did.
He posted them on the Sneaky Dragon Facebook page. So if you go to our Facebook page, Sneaky Dragon, on on what is known as Facebook, you will find those drawings there under last episode's show, whatever last episode was, 644.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really good.
Thumbs up. That was my side of things. Do we have any emails?
That's all you got?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. That's fine. It's like a kid on Christmas. It's just like, is that all the presents? Yeah.
That's what I say. We do have an email.
All right. Well,
strangely enough.
Lay it on me, brother.
From Will Harwell. Okay. He's double dipping. He's writing emails and he's also commenting.
Well, there's two ways.
Will says, hi, Sneak Lords. Which I do like. David did a great job describing the Holy Grail script book. Oh, thank you. Well, I'll stop there.
Nice.
But left off a couple of my favorite things about it.
Oh, geez. Well, that's not a great job at all.
Oh, I suck. It's as hard as trying to do your tile floor. Throughout the main script colored pages, dozens of facing pages are covered with Terry Gilliam's charming and occasionally naughty doodles, along with lots and lots of thumbnail storyboard sketches working out shots. I've attached an example below. So yes, that is true. I did not mention that. There are Terry Gilliam illustrations throughout the book, which is pretty amazing as well. And I did say this, maybe it wasn't as clear as Will would have liked, but he says, also, they left in the scenes that got scrapped. There are big grease penciled lines crossing out sections or whole pages of scenes, including a long one featuring, quote unquote, King Brian. Other bits are rewritten on the page margins by hand. It's such a fascinating little window into their minds at the time, watching it messily evolve in front of you. Yeah, it is amazing. It is an amazing book. But I mean, it's not quite the same with the Life of Brian book, but the Life of Brian book does have the complete script in it as well, including scenes that were cut. Because if you watch the Life of Brian movie, there is that inexplicable scene at the end of the film during the crucifixion sequence where Eric Idle turns up as part of some sort of a parody of a Israeli terrorist group, but they're like a suicide squad and they all kill themselves. Rather than rescue Brian, they all kill themselves. And so it's kind of weird because you don't, where are these people from? It was a scene in the film that kind of explained them more clearly, which was cut, but they left in the scene at the foot of the cross. So it's kind of an odd choice. But anyway, well, thank you, Will, for writing. And I will. Actually, you know what? I used to have two versions of the Holy Grail book because I wore out the one that I had so thoroughly. So I bought a new one, a nice new one. And I gave one time my cousin Jason, also a co-host of Refresh My Memory, was visiting my house. So I gave him my older version of it since I thought he'd appreciate it. No one else would. Yeah.
He's a fine fellow.
A fine fellow of a man.
We're going to be recording a new episode, two new episodes, but, you know, we keep record two at a time. Yeah.
What?
This weekend.
Shocking.
Looking forward to it.
All right.
But it means I got to make snacks. and there you go. So questions for next week. Hey, man, how about the old perfectionist thing I said? Are you a perfectionist?
Yes.
And if so, do you find that's helpful?
No.
Or not? Okay, so that's Dave asking and answering. What would you like to ask the nice people? I feel like I'm a ventriloquist. Hey, Knothead, what do you want to say to the nice people before we sing our song? My grandfather's clock was too big for the shelf.
Thank you for putting that in there. So I try to desperately think of a question for this week. I really should plan this, guys. Like I'm just terrible at this. Question for
this week. And they call me the dummy. Oh, knucklehead, stop it. Let the nice man give his question. I question why he's here. Oh, knucklehead, stop it. There's no need to be rude. I'm putting you in your box.
Well, something related to what Ian and I were talking about. What disturbs you the most to see in a movie?
Okay.
How's that sound? What disturbs you the most when you see a movie? Is it like me watching people eat mushrooms? No, it's not really a thing for me anyway. But now that I've watched a couple of episodes of The Last of Us, maybe I will be more scared of mushrooms. Terrified, in fact.
Is it directors with a foot fetish? That disturbs me when I see them. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to watch a lot of this. I don't care for this at all.
I like feet. I like feet, so it doesn't bother me.
I don't like it. I should. You know, I look at all the things from my childhood and go like, I was all lined up to have a foot fetish. And boy, howdy, it didn't end up happening.
I like it, and I like that he uses it to, I mean, I don't know if he does it in every movie, but definitely in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it's used to underline a character.
Okay.
Their footwear. Whether it's the continual wear of cowboy boots by a person who's not a cowboy, in Leonardo DiCaprio's character, Brad Pitt's character's wearing, when he's not a hippie at all, but wearing this kind of hippie moccasins, sure, which shows this sort of attempt to be hip, but he's not really there. Yeah. He's trying not to be left behind. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio's character is being left behind, but Cliff, is that his name, Cliff, in the movie? Is trying not to be left behind, you know. And then, of course, Margaret Qualley's Manson girl's wonderfully dirty feet.
Yeah.
This so evocative of a person like that, you know, and so I think and that really works as a sort of character signs of.
I don't disagree with everything you're saying, but also ew.
But I like feet. That's there's a difference between us there. Anyway, folks, you want to answer these questions? I was going to say stunning questions, but maybe that's wrong. That's the wrong way to describe them. But you want to answer these questions? Go to the website. It's called SneakyDragon.com. Go there. Go there. And answer questions. The episode is there, and underneath it is spaces for your thoughts and feelings and wishes and hopes and dreams. Also, you can email us at sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. And hey, guess what? Our question show is coming up, as we've said a few times. Send us some questions. We've had some entries. We've had some multiple question entries. So you know what? They're ahead of you. If you want to get in on this little, if you want to get on the ground floor of winning a gift pack. Let me tell you, one of the things that's going to be in the gift pack, a mixtape from me. I've kind of put it together. So I'm not 100% there yet, but I'm getting there. I'm getting there. It takes a while to make these things work.
Nice.
We're on Facebook, as we were saying earlier. A Facebook page. It's called Sneaky Dragon. You can go there and you can see some wonderful little bits of work. I don't know if they're full drawings. I think you just kind of did a little manipulation with images, right, Ed? But anyway, they're there. They're fun. Path of Totality, everybody.
Check them out.
We're on Tumblr, as you know. We're on Twitter, formerly known as X. And we are also on Patreon. If you would like to support, if you'd like to continue to enjoy the show by supporting us, that would be great.
Because the Chubb group isn't supporting us anymore.
They are not.
No, we used to be supported by a generous grant from the Chubb group.
Yeah.
Then we made fun of their name. We thought it was funny. And they went, that's the one thing that we can't abide. And I'm like, well, I mean, listen to the way you talk. No one makes fun of the Chubb group.
Chubb.
And then was like, okay, well, we're going to keep getting our money then from Wang Computers. And I'm like, we heard what you said. Like, whoa, I don't even know you guys still existed. Yeah. Chubb and Wang are teaming up. Oh no, that's too bad. So yeah, we need public support now.
Yes, we do. Yes,
I'm sorry about
also Stiff Records pulled their support as well.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's been a hard time for us.
It's really hard. It's a really hard time.
It's a really hard time. It's
not as hard as it is for Wang or Chubb. Those guys have gone through some Chubb's real hard times.
Chubb's never been hard. That's a problem.
Yeah,
but anyway,
Chubb, I mean, the last decade was difficult. I mean, Chubb had some hard times in his teens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been dysfunctional.
The teen years, yeah.
It's been some dysfunction, that's true. Anyway. Folks, thank you for listening to this episode. I'm actually not sorry. I'm happy that it took this turn in the show. I mean, what more do you want? We did talk about this, we talked about
last
that.
Last words. And then? That'd be a great deathbed thing. I'm sorry for... You know what? I'm not sorry. I'm happy.
That is a good way to go.
Yeah.
No regrets. No regrets, as they say. Let us say that every day of our life, everyone, no regrets. And don't worry about it. Thought you wanted to go swimming.
I do. Swimming starts around 6.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I got a little time. So I'm going to the Eileen Daly pool, if that's okay. It's just down Hastings.
Huh.
In Barnaby.
Yeah. There's someone with an erectile problem.
Eileen Daly? Ha ha. And I pee freely.